Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Killer Psyche ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
A listener note, this episode contains adult content and is not suitable for everyone. Please be advised. Last year, when we were covering the search for Gabby Petito, the 22-year-old travel blogger who went missing in Wyoming, the disappearance of the young geologist Daniel Robinson was brought to my attention. At the time that Gabby disappeared, Daniel had been missing for 11 weeks, or 79 days to be exact. Those 79 days had been hell for David Robinson, Daniel's father, and for the rest of his family. After Daniel disappeared, David relocated from South Carolina to Arizona, where Daniel had gone missing. David was and is working tirelessly to follow any lead that might help him discover what happened to his son. What we do know is that at approximately 9 a.m. on June 23rd, 2021, Daniel was leaving a work site in the Buckeye Desert where he was testing the groundwater. One of his co-workers saw him drive away in his 2017 Blue Jeep Renegade. This was the last time anyone saw Daniel, or at least anyone who has come forward with information. Daniel's truck was later found abandoned and totaled in the desert, but no sign of Daniel. There was a pile of clothes near the car, but no other indication that Daniel had been there. Since his son's disappearance, David has scoured the desert where Daniel was last seen and where his truck was found. While he has found many remains, none are Daniel's. David has also discovered that his son's case is not as open and shut as the police initially believed. It now appears likely that foul play was involved. I had the good fortune of meeting David when I was at CrimeCon. His love and devotion to finding his son inspired us at Killer Psyche to do whatever we can to help. After season one and our episodes on Cindy White, we saw how powerful our listeners could be when they flooded websites to sign petitions for her clemency. I realized that I could bring awareness to cases that might not have as much publicity as the ones we've covered. Hopefully, our listeners can work their magic again and help bring a loved one home or bring a murderer to justice. Killer Psyche is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now and get a quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
From Wondery and Treefort, I'm Candace DeLong, and this is the second season of Killer Psyche. I've spent 5 decades studying people's minds through my work as an FBI profiler and psychiatric nurse. I've interviewed lots of murderers, including serial killers. And the question of why they did it is what I get asked time and time again. It is difficult to get a satisfying answer without diving deep into their mindsets. So that's what we're doing. And I will give you my best analysis in this series of what made them do what they did. This episode is The Search for Daniel Robinson.
I'm David Robinson. I am the father of geologist Daniel Cornelius Robinson.
Thanks so much for joining us. Would you tell me a little bit about Daniel as a person? What is he like?
He's the youngest of 4 children. They have an older brother and twin sisters. Just like any real child, I always want a lot of attention. Of course, he get a lot of attention because he's the youngest. He's a very friendly person. He's inquisitive, motivated, and just a loving person, very loving. It was a joy to watch him keep the family together, keep our unit together, meaning that sometimes if there's any kind of division there, Daniel would definitely stand in that gap. That's one of the things that I really, really enjoy about him, just the way he pulled people together. I tend to think of it now, the way he pulled people together. When Daniel was first born, he was born with one hand. What we would thought at the time would have been a handicap for Daniel, we learned quickly that it's not a handicap. He's very confident in himself. He definitely is that boy that wanted to challenge everything. He's done very well for himself when it comes to teaching himself.
Daniel chose not to wear prosthetics. Why is that?
You know, his mother and I, after discussion, decided to let him try prosthetics. It was a restriction instead of something that's actually helping. He made that kind of clear to us in his own way. This is who I am. This is who I want to be. He's more comfortable with being who he is as a person, the way he was born. And, you know, instead of us teaching him, he's actually teaching us. In high school, always getting awards and things like that academically. He did go to college at Charleston in Charleston, South Carolina, and then he graduated with honors. Very proud of him at the time.
So why did he choose to study geology?
Daniel found something about rocks that he enjoyed. He had a rock collection. He had a big one, too, in his living room. I didn't understand it at the time until I talked to other geologists. Hey, it's a geologist thing. That's just what they enjoy. They love that.
Daniel moved out to Arizona. Why Arizona?
Right after graduation, he had to take a final class in Flagstaff, Arizona. He had a best friend in college. The best friend's mother owned the company that he's worked for today. And that company happened to be in Phoenix. He just didn't come back to South Carolina. He just went straight to Phoenix, Arizona, and started his job with that company.
When was the last time you spoke to Daniel?
2 or 3 days before Daniel went missing. I mean, it was a 2-hour conversation. We had the same thing we always do, father and son talk. You have his questions, I have my answers. I listen to what he had to say and try to give him the best advice as I can. That was the last time I spoke with my son.
When and how did you find out Daniel was missing?
Well, I found out Daniel was missing through a phone call from my daughter. She also lived in Phoenix at the time. On June the 23rd, someone come to knock on her door. It was one of Daniel's coworkers inquiring if Daniel was over to her residence. She was really stunned. So she called me. First thing I have to do as a parent is keep my daughter calm. I told her to just go to his apartment to see if he's there. While I tried to make a few phone calls, I had his mother reach out. We didn't get no answer. So, you know, that kind of run up a red flag somewhat. Started asking around to his company, when's the last time he was there at his job site? And it was 9 in the morning, but here it is over 6 hours later, and nobody I've heard from Daniel, that is very unusual. That's something that caught my attention.
Do you know what Daniel's responsibilities were the day he went missing?
Daniel is a field geologist. He gets assignments to go to various well sites all over Arizona. His job is just to check the viability of these wells. On June the 23rd last year, he had two assignments. One to go to a well around 7 o'clock that morning. That's off of Verado Way, off of I-10 in Arizona. The second was off of Sun Valley Parkway in Cactus Road Junction area out there in that desert. According to his company, he did make it to the first well site, and he took a couple pictures there for whatever reason. And I do have that on his phone. Never did it before.
Who was the last person to see Daniel or speak to him?
He made a call to the worker from that company that was waiting on him. There was only one person waiting on him at the second well site. Daniel called him to get directions there. Once he got to the location, they had a conversation briefly on the side of the road there. My son then followed him into that desert to get to that well site. I talked to Daniel many times when he go to well sites, and it's often this way. He meet one representative, the guy from that was waiting on him at that site, Ken is his name, is from a company called Weber.
What did he say about Daniel?
According to that worker, Daniel was acting strange. His conversation was strange. He was expressing that he wanted to go back to Phoenix to get some rest, that he was staring off into the desert, and Daniel was walking around in circles or something out of other. He looked into his eyes to see that his eyes were dilated and things like that. One of the things that puzzled me as a father, and the reason why I had to talk to him myself, is I'm a Black man. Our eyes are generally dark brown. Doctors have a hard time. I go to eye doctors all the time. Nobody can look in a Black person's eye without a flashlight and say, hey, look, your eyes are dilated or not. I couldn't see my son standing still for somebody to put a flashlight in his eye to see if his eyes are dilated or not. And why would he do that in the first place, you know, just meeting somebody for the first time? So I don't know what the guy's thinking was when he said that.
Can you tell me what the first few days of the search for Daniel were like for you?
The hours when I was calling him, I looked at it, it was over 6 hours. Then I knew for a fact that's when I was going to have to put in this person report, because that is way out of Daniel's character. He moved from Phoenix to Tempe. So he was a resident of Tempe at the time. So I called the Tempe Police Department to report him missing. I learned from his job, this is a place called the White Taint Mountains. And I said, hey, look, we went missing near the White Taint Mountains. The Tempe Police Department directed me to Buckeye, because that's the Buckeye territory. They decided to tell me I had to wait 12 hours to report him. I was like, I think 3 hours short of the 12-hour mark. I had to wait around the house for like 3 hours and then call back to report him missing. Once I did that, the officer did take charge. It was Officer Cruz. He did the night shift. He told me, hey, I'm going down Sun Valley Parkway to see if your son's stuck on the side of the road. That made me feel good. Like somebody was doing something. Officer Cruz was often calling to give me updates. And they told me, hey, look, it's a desert. I didn't realize that it was actually a desert that my son went missing in. And I did ask the Buckeye Police Department to go out and search. They told me they couldn't because it was nighttime, but they'll do it in the morning with a helicopter. The next morning, I get another call from an officer who took over for the day shift. Told me, hey, Mr. Robinson, we will have a helicopter go out in the desert search for his son. The officer ended up calling me back almost an hour later. The flight has been canceled. It's been unauthorized because his higher up said, because your son is a grown man, if he wants to disappear on his own, he can. Knowing that they wasn't planning to look for my son out there in that desert, I just lost it. I lost it, grabbed everything I can and put it in my vehicle and just started heading west. I left out on the 24th and I arrived to Arizona on the 26th of June. I didn't want to stop at all. I just wanted to drive straight through. I felt anxious. I wouldn't get there fast enough.
The fact that when someone tell me they weren't going to search for my son, we rely on law enforcement. So when I felt that I wasn't going to get that, I felt helpless. I tried to keep my children calm. I had to act really, really quickly because I know that nobody else was going to do it.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe as ex-homicide detective Roy Freeman. Freeman is forced to piece together the brutal evidence from a decade-old murder investigation,
With only instincts to trust, he faces a chilling truth. Sometimes it's best to let sleeping dogs lie. I'm really looking forward to this movie. I have interviewed some people that had a fractured mind regarding traumatic events. This is going to be good. Watch Sleeping Dogs now on digital on sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery. Killer Psyche is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up for spring, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself too thin. Whether you thrive around people or you prefer some more alone time, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that does not drain your battery. Your therapist can help you identify triggers and appropriate coping mechanisms so you can continue to build helpful habits. Plus, therapy can be beneficial for everyone, not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/psyche today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/psyche. Walk me through what happened once you arrived in Arizona.
Well, when I got to Arizona, the first thing I needed to do as a father is talk to the person who last saw my son. You know, just hearing from law enforcement the story that just suggests that my son just disappeared out there in the desert didn't settle right with me. I had to look in the person's eye and let them tell me that myself. I did talk to Ken at the well site. I had set that up with Daniel's job, who in turn talked to Ken's company and set all of that up for me to meet him out on Sun Valley Parkway, ironically. It was a very strange encounter. I brought along my daughter, and a little while later, a vehicle showed up. I thought it was him. It was actually someone else. And he offered to give me a ride to the well site. I asked him how far it was. He said, it's about 5, 10, 15 miles away. I told him that's too far. I told him no. I had my daughter out there. A little while later, this gentleman, he got on the cell phone and pulled his truck forward so I couldn't get an earshot of what he was speaking about. But then once he got finished, he said, hey, Ken is on his way. And he showed up. The first thing I know being military is we wash hands. And his body language was really defensive. I'm assuming that he was really stressed and thinking I was up there in anger or something. I'm not sure. But once he calmed down a little, he started talking. He told me the story, exactly the way the officers told me. I had two officers tell me the story, but it was verbatim. I mean, it was exact, pretty much the same. As the conversation gone, he got really comfortable with me. He started loosening up. Then he went back over the story again, and that's when he added in the things. He took it upon himself to go look for Daniel. He said, I saw your son tire tracks, so I didn't disturb them. Followed those tracks till it got to a T-junction. He said these tracks went to the right, going out farther into the desert. And then he also explained that he painted some rocks with red paint so he can just direct police where the tracks led to, that type of deal. So he went a lot farther than what the police told me. After the conversation, we left. Told him thank you for the information, and we got in the car. We discussed what he talked about. But one thing I can say is that many people travel there because it is a well site. Many people, vehicles travel there, and there's tons of tracks there. So I don't know how you can determine the difference between which was my son and which was somebody else's. I left that well site feeling really suspicious of the last person that seen my son.
How did the police respond to the discrepancy?
We told them immediately, and the detective said, that's what he said? Yes, that's what he said. And that was it. That was the end of the story, literally. We didn't hear any more follow-up on it. That's not even in the report. It was hurtful to me. My daughter and I, we met with the detectives again. We sat down and asked for a few things. We wanted cell phone pings because we were calling St. Daniel's phone for an entire day before
it finally started going straight to voicemail. I guess it died. We wanted to have videos that showed him leaving his house on the way to work, on the interstate. And we needed to get information from his Uconet. You know, we thought it was an OnStar at the time. Found out the vehicle had a thing called Uconet. It's like an OnStar, but it's a different brand. Of course, they told her, hey, we're going to get the cell phone ping. Then again, they did like they did with the helicopter. A few hours later, they told me that the higher up said, no, we're not going to get the cell phone pings because the son's case is not a criminal case and no judge would ever give them a warrant to look into cell phone pings. So we asked for, again, images of some kind of video at a traffic light to show. They said, oh, we can't find any. They found one picture of my son being on the interstate, and that was a month prior when he was going to see his sister in California. They have no footage of Danny ever driving in Arizona.
When you felt you weren't getting support from the Buckeye police, what did you do?
I asked the Tempe Police Department, being that Daniel was a resident of Tempe at the time, to go search his apartment. They told me they couldn't. They only can get asked by Buckeye. So I did ask the Buckeye Police Department to do it as well. They didn't at first, but they did ask Tempe to do a what they call as a drive-by, literally a drive-by, to see if the windows look damaged or something suspicious. Nobody entered Daniel's apartment. My daughter tried with the landlords to get access to Daniel's apartment. Because of legal reasonings, they was reluctant to do that. They didn't allow us to do that as well. So we was kind of stuck. Everything that we tried to get some type of answer, to get some understanding what happened that day that my son went missing, they somehow magically not be able to get those things. That put me in a position as a father to continue my own investigation and find out answers on my own. I started doing things like doing my own interview, trying to find out what's going on with my son's case. I didn't get no help from the Buckeye Police Department at all. No law enforcement would help me. I did let them know, hey, look, I'm going into that desert to look for my son. They advised me not to. They told me the terrain is really rough. As a veteran in Afghanistan, I can understand desert conditions, but I would go out there every day to hold my binoculars out because the terrain looked kind of flat from the road, but it's different once you get in there. And I thought I could maybe spot Daniel's vehicle from the road. And so I did that constantly until the only thing that was holding me back from my son is that desert. I did some due diligence of learning about the washes and things, the dangers of the desert itself, that desert terrain. And then I started my search party where I had a group of people as well as one person that knew about that desert as my guide. My daughter and I had to do things on our own, reach out to the NAACP, to you name it, try to get help. I started a website, pleasehelpfinddaniel.com, to try to put Daniel's picture up on social media, to try to elicit help from the community. And they did. The community showed up. They showed up, and that's why I was able to put my searches together, getting hundreds of people mobilized out there to help me go search for Daniel, to rescue him at the time. I didn't want to think of things as foul play. In my mind, he's stuck out there somewhere. We need to find him.
Let's talk about the break in the case. When was that?
I will never forget this date. It was on July the 20th. I got a phone call a little after 9 that morning from the Buckeye Police Department. They found my son's vehicle. On July the 19th, a rancher who owns some land out there was out searching for his cattle. He found my son's vehicle. I was really afraid. The next thought in my head at the time when he said that it was that he was going to say something negative about my son. He said, no, we didn't find him. We didn't find him. But they waited almost over 24 hours to tell me that. They knew I was out there looking for him. That really made me uptight because I was out there desperate looking for my son to rescue him. He explained to me that they spent over 20 hours of searching for my son or something out there in the desert. But they never called me about it. I was very upset with that. Buckeye Police Department wanted to have me come up to the police department in the parking lot to give me a briefing and show me the one picture and explain to me, this is your son's clothing outside the vehicle on the ground. And he asked me, hey, do your son wear boxes of briefs? I wouldn't know those type things. He's a grown man. That's what I told him. He said, well, everything. I mean, everything from down to his socks and underwear was on the ground. Well, he was explaining the vehicle damage to me. He said, hey, look, the vehicle rolled and twisted and flipped and turned. And it was devastating hearing him say that. And he said it landed on the side. But he said the good thing is your son didn't sustain any injury because he had his seatbelt on. And we know he had a seatbelt on because the way seatbelts locks when accidents happen. And he said we didn't see any blood in the vehicle. But we believe that he had a severe head injury, severe brain injury, that he kicked his way out of the sunroof. And he pointed on the picture and said, this is why the glass is on the ground. He escaped out of the sunroof. And because he went through this thing and telling me how brain injuries causes you to feel like you're hot and you shred your clothes off. And that's the reason why his clothes are in a pile. And he believed that my son just walked off, cool off, set up under a tree somewhere where he probably succumbed to his injury and some wild animal got him. Then he later told me that once he took me to the police station, had me follow him there to see the vehicle the first time. I thought I was going to the scene where the vehicle was found, but no, he took me to the police compound. Before we see the vehicle, he stopped me and said, hey, Mr. Robinson, I've seen this type of thing before. Families think their loved one is missing. But he went on to tell me a story about some family thought the lady was missing. Turned out she decided to become a nun. And then he later said, hey, look, I'm not necessarily saying that, but maybe your son wanted to leave and join the monastery and become a monk.
They really told you that Daniel might have joined a monastery?
One thing about Daniel is out of his siblings, myself, his mother, we talk about anything. They can talk to us about anything. My son decided to become a monk. Of course, we're going to be like, hey, man, why you want to do that? But ultimately, Daniel, no, he can do what he want to do. He's a grown man. We wouldn't like it, but we would support him. He know that. But because of that, in my investigation, I had to go find a monastery. And I did. It wasn't walking distance, but it was drivable to get there. I went to go check it out. Of course, it was closed down because of COVID. But because of that, I had to do that, even though it sounded ludicrous, but I had to do it ultimately. I had to do it anyway. Once he showed me the vehicle there, he kept asking me to open the doors. One of the airbags hanging out the driver's window. I was just devastated, stunned. And of course, I just had enough. And I said, hey, sir, I just need to leave. His next statement to me was, well, Mr. Robinson, you got to get this vehicle out of here today. If you don't, we're going to have it towed and you're going to have to pay storage fees. Of course, I begged him. I said, hey, can you give me like 3 days? Because I'm still in shock. And I'm not from Arizona, but can you give me like 3 days? And he agreed to that. About a day or two after, that's where I learned that they didn't do any work on the scene, which upset me. And Chief Hall was telling me that he had pictures. He kept using the word pictures, plural. And that was really upsetting me because they only gave me one picture to go by. And that's the only thing I can go to show anything what happened here at the scene. In that meeting, I demanded them to do fingerprinting because they didn't do any forensic work on the scene. He agreed to do that.
When did you decide to hire a private investigator?
When he told me, hey, your son may have joined a monastery, become a monk, way outside of what he would do. Things that didn't make sense to me, he was explaining to me that head injuries make you shred your clothes off and you feel hot and all that. That's the reason why I'm retired from the military. I suffered a head injury from an IED blast. And I never had a desire to take my clothes off because I'm hot or something. So I didn't believe the story when he was saying that to me. I thought it was belittling me. So, of course, I needed a second opinion. Once my private investigator came aboard, the first thing he wanted to do was get the black box data. He reached out to the Buckeye Police Department, which told him that they didn't have an investigation. It's over, and they turned it over to him. He's an accident reconstructionist. My idea was to find out what happened to my son's vehicle. He was able to look at the vehicles and the pictures, determine that the accident didn't happen in this ravine. There's red transfer paint on the vehicle on the side, on the passenger side of the vehicle lying on the ground. That's nothing red in the desert that the vehicle came in contact with. Determined that the vehicle wasn't there, didn't crash there. The statement from the rancher he and I had an interview with that said the vehicle wasn't there 2 to 3 days prior to July the 19th because he was there. My private investigator felt the vehicle was staged there. He went through the pictures and showed me there's two impressions on the glass where somebody appeared to take something heavy. You don't know if it was a bat or something heavier like a boulder, but those are two impressions only come from an impact from the outside inward. He also explained to me the glass. There's only one on the glass that's missing in that vehicle is the driver's door. He explained to me it didn't happen with the vehicle on the side. It happened with the vehicle on its wheels. Also, the door was open when that glass got broken out because there's no glass in the vehicle at all.
the damage on the vehicle was inconsistent with the impact coming down that ravine. He also found out the speed of the vehicle when the crash happened. It was impossible for the vehicle to have enough space with the terrain, the ruggedness, and the vegetation with the heavy vehicle coming up a hill to get that speed up. Later, he took the infotainment system out the vehicle, which is where the vehicle connects with his phone and things like that. He had that system analyzed in California. And when he came back with a 900-page report, he found out that there was multiple accidents, but the first one happened 4 hours after my son went missing. My son went missing roughly around 9 o'clock that morning. That first accident happened at 1 o'clock. So once we got all those evidence together, 2 weeks after that, he found a sock that belongs to us, that matched the sock that the Buckeye Police Department kept. He found that farther out in the desert near the well site. He was reluctant to turn things over to the Buckeye Police Department, what we found, because he didn't really trust them. But I talked to him about it. Let's go ahead and try to see if we can get law enforcement to help us find out what happened to my son. Once we did that, that's when the Buckeye Police Department shut down. And to this day, I don't have really conversations with them at all. They don't talk to me anymore. They decided to hire their own private investigator to rebut everything my investigator found.
When did the police department shut down the investigation?
Roughly around the 23rd, 24th. It was right after the meeting when they turned all those items over to me. I didn't realize that meant that it was over with the case until my investigator literally told me, they said they didn't have an investigation.
What's going on with the search?
I have been conducting several weeks of searches, utilizing hundreds of volunteers from different states. We found strange items. Some of the things were, of course, animal remains, because it's a desert. We found some things that appeared to be human remains, but we end up finding a human skull. And that human skull was close to this area where my son's vehicle was found. It's only several hundred feet away. So that was really puzzling to me. I can't remember the exact date, but it was in November. We did find a set of human remains, the femur, as well as hip bones and vertebrae. I'll never forget that day when that was found. At the time, I got a radio call from my investigator who was out on the ground. They wanted me to come out to the scene. At first, they used to be reluctant of telling me when we found human remains, because it did upset me. I tell them, look, I'm a big guy. I'm a military. I've seen some things. I had to do things on my own. I know it's a difference between my son, but I need to be there for my son. This remain was very pinkish, and the bone was still pink as it actually was fresher and it still had collagen stuff that was still there. It scared me as a father. I ended up finding a second one, femur sitting there. It was all scattered on along a ravine. So I'm out there in the ravine scrubbing hard as I can, because I felt in my brain, if it's my son, I want every bit of my son. I want every piece of him. I hate to say it that way, but that's what's in my mind at the time. We did call the Buckeye Police Department, because they did, for whatever reason this time, never did before, send an officer out. He came out to while I was down still in that ravine. I demanded the Maricopa County examiners have a look at it. We sent the pictures there. We had to wait for 3 hours, but they came back and said they're all human bones. The first time I ever seen the Buckeye Police Department made at a crime scene out there, they shut it down. It was very scary for me. Very scary for me, because in my mind, it's too fresh. Something I have never seen before. So I hung around while the volunteers was gone. I talked to the detective and say, look, I need to find out this is my son. He said, just go ahead home and we'll let you know. Got in my vehicle. Before I could make it, it's a 40-minute ride to Phoenix. I got a phone call from the Buckeye Department detective saying it's not your son. I asked him how. He said, because it's not a black man's bone. That's the way they told me that Buckeye Police Department told me. They don't know who it belongs to. They don't know who it belongs to this date. Every time we find human remains out there, it's devastating. But at the same time, when I find out it has no association with Daniel, it's a catch too. It's a mixed feeling. You know what I'm saying? You bring some form of closure to a family, but to me, it's still hurtful because we only find a bone here and there. We're not finding everything of this person. So that's the way I think nobody wants to see they have a family member come back to them in those kind of manners.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Why do you think the police reopened the case?
I do not know, but I did ask them to revisit some of those workers. And the reason why, because I don't really understand these stories. I wrote Chief Hall, I CC'd the city manager, the mayor, as well as some other officials. And there's a long letter describing my son going missing in the crime scene. We find the human remains out there. I didn't understand why this whole area is not deemed a crime scene. But my son went missing in this crime scene under suspicious circumstances. He wrote back he had to agree.
And you were under the impression that there was going to be an FBI briefing on your son's case?
Immediately, he said he's going to have that done. And immediately, my attorney and I crafted a letter. I need to be there in this case with briefing. The department decided to do it behind my back. When I was about to check in the inquirer on this case briefing, they told me they already had it. And the detective told me, say, hey, I wasn't there myself, but they told me the FBI decided not to come in because you, Mr. Robinson, are doing such a great job on your own. We don't need to come in. And that's exactly what I was told to me by that detective.
That is astounding. I don't doubt the detective said that to you. I believe that for sure, but I don't believe that actually happened. FBI agents are public servants. It is our job to investigate. It is our job to work with police. And in a million years, if an FBI agent did say that to a cop, like, oh, we're not going to help you with your case because you're doing such a good, they'd be fired. So what I think is that detective that said that to you is blowing you off. There was no interaction with the FBI at all. So what do you plan on doing next?
Well, you know, it took me 3 months just to get local coverage for Daniel's case. I worked hard on social media to put Daniel's name out there. One of the tweets ended up going viral because someone retweeted a post that I put up. When that tragedy happened with the Petito case, which is a tragedy, my son's case, his name had been put out a lot farther. I think she was around the same age or something. That hurt me. It hurt me because, you know, I said, oh my God, here it is, and somebody else's child missing. I know exactly what that family is going through. The Petito case, it was 24 hours, 7 days a week type deal. It hurt a little. I never, ever blamed the Petito family. I think they deserve that coverage. But I also think that Daniel's case and many of his other families deserve that coverage as well. And I was just thinking about all the time how hard I was really working just to try to get Daniel's name out there. But I know communication is key to anything. So I want to make sure that Daniel's name is out there to the public, because if they can take that one person that may have heard something, seen something, can say something, only if they know what was going on. So that was crucial to me. I think everybody's important. I know my son is very important. And I just want to make sure that people understand that as well. One of my biggest things is that I think everybody should receive the same equal attention as the other.
I know that our podcast took a lot of flack for discussing white woman syndrome, but it's a real thing. Do you think the awareness of white woman syndrome had any effect on the search for Daniel?
One thing about the Petito family and my family was having a young person missing. And sometimes with the media, feel like they are pinning one family against the other in competition, having some type of a spotlight.
it's not the family's fault. It's the way that this country view things. We had to be honest. Sometimes the media give certain things more attention than others, but it has no reflection on the pain and suffering that families feel. Each family should have the same exact level of attention every time. So I think this, what happened in the two different cases, is something that can be examined to say, hey, look, we need to do better as a country to make sure that everybody gets treated fairly the same way. It's very sad that, you know, my son getting some type of national attention was based on a tragedy that happened with the Petito family. And that hurts. That's more hurtful to me.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell us? Anything we haven't touched on?
Being that I have been doing an investigation, when I say investigation, it's three parts of the investigation for me. As one that Buckeye Police Department say they was doing, it's the one that I hired my private investigator to do, and then it's my own investigation as well. The things I have found would suggest foul play. And what foul play really means, I do not know, as in if someone, for instance, murdered my son, I wouldn't know that part. But I do know some people was involved with him being missing. Everything happened with some of the other people's involvement. Nobody just vanishes without trace, you know.
What happens now?
Well, for me, you know, I would like to grieve my son's disappearance. I haven't been able to grieve at all. My mind, you know, one thing when I set on that road to head out to Arizona, I was emotional. I was in an emotional state. One thing I had to catch myself is tell myself, look, I love my son. I'm going to do what I have to do for him. I'm going to find my son. The second part is I had to put my military training there. And one of the things I learned from my time in Afghanistan, for instance, I'd never been to a funeral since I was 5 years old, but we had a memorial. One soldier, he was our first casualty there, 18-year-old child. And the thing is, when you're not able to grieve at the time, because grief can get you killed in Afghanistan, your mind got to stay on your mission, because if it don't, you know, saying you start slacking some type of way because of that. You know, our missions are very effective. And so my mission had to be effective with Daniel as well. I said, hey, look, I had to put my emotions aside. I'm going to have to find out what happened to my son, where he is, where he's located. So that helped me. My son is my mission. I'm going to put him first. And also, no, I'm not going to leave my son behind. That's one thing that's a mandate for the military as well. No matter what, we're not leaving a soldier behind, dead or alive. We're not leaving our soldier behind. So I'm definitely not leaving my son behind. I've made that clear to myself as well. If I ever get a little moment where I have nothing to do, that's my rough moments. So I will stay busy. That kind of keep me from getting on that side where I end up becoming ineffective for my son. So I had to stay effective. And that's why I keep going. I just keep pushing. Just keep pushing myself until I can't push no more.
David, tell me about the foundation you set up.
So the Daniel Robinson Foundation is in its infancy stage right now. But the foundation will be able to help other families get things like flyers out instantly, as well as providing services where if a person, for instance, out in the field looking for their loved one, we can provide the drones, we can provide the vehicles and certain resources they need to assist.
What can Killer Psyche listeners do to help bring Daniel home?
I need people to go out and sign the petition to put pressure on the Buckeye Police Department to do more. If you want to help, you can go to pleasehelpfinddaniel.com. There's things from the petition to ways you can donate to help keep things going, as well as how you can help me search for my son. And also, the PDF is there on pleasehelpfinddaniel.com, where you can print them out yourself, or you can put them out on your social media to help bring awareness to Daniel's case.
David, I want to thank you so much for the interview. I really hope that we can help you bring Daniel home.
I want to really believe, despite everything that I found evidence-wise, that would suggest some type of foul play, like somebody did something to Daniel, that some kind of way he escaped and he's out there, don't know who he is, or he's being held captive, or whatever the case may be, where we can actually get him back and I can bring him back home. So I do have that faith. That's it. Just thank you for your interview and thank you for the prayers and things like that.
If you would like to help in the search for Daniel Robinson, we have included links to David's website and his GoFundMe page in the episode description.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Killer Psyche ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. From Wondery and Treefort Media, this is Killer Psyche. I'm your host, Candace DeLong. This episode was written and produced by Lisa Ammerman and Julie Burke. Story research and additional writing by Anne Liu. Mix and sound design by Joshua Morales. Senior audio producer, Maxwell Carney. Head of audio, Tom Monahan. Renee Levesque is our production manager. Lindsay Whistler, Colin Modell, and Jada Williams are production assistants. Oscar Guido is the producer from Treefort Media. From Amazon Music and Wondery, the producer is Stephanie Joaquin. And the co-executive producer is Julie Burke. Lastly, our executive producers are Kelly Garner and Lisa Ammerman for Treefort, and Marshall Louie and Aaron O'Flaherty for Wondery. The series is produced by Wondery and Treefort Media.
Yo, Trey.
Yeah, Kevin, what's up, man?
I was just thinking, what would have happened if Drew Brees didn't fail his physical with the Dolphins and ended up playing under Nick Saban in Miami?
There's a good shot the Finns establish a dynasty. Tom Brady and Bill Belichick probably don't become GOATs, and Tuscaloosa doesn't become the center of the college football universe.
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Hey, I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass
or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.